Welcome to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom is off today. Well, early voting can proceed at Florida's college and university campuses. That ruling coming down from a federal judge this week in a blow to Governor Rick Scott's administration. U.S. District Judge Mark Walker says Scott's elections officials showed, quote, a stark pattern of discrimination, unquote, in blocking early voting on campus, particularly the University of Florida. Now, Florida Secretary of State Ken Detzner has to report back to this judge by today, in fact, that all 67 Florida counties can use campus buildings for early voting this fall. Now, this applies to the November election, not the August primary election that's just a month away. In the ruling, the judge noted the growing popularity of early voting in this third largest state in the nation, Florida. Lots of you out there like to vote early. He also pointed out that nearly 830,000 students are enrolled at state colleges and universities. By the way, young voters are registering to vote in large numbers across Florida leading into the primary election. Youth voter registration is up 40% after the Parkland mass shootings. We're going to talk about that more later in the hour. Right now, though, what we want to talk about is this. How will the judge's ruling impact the youth vote this fall here in Florida? We're going to begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look as we welcome Patty Brigham. She's president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, one of the groups who brought the lawsuit challenging that campus early voting ban. Patty is on the line from Orlando. Patty Brigham, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And here's our question to callers. What is your reaction to this ruling from a federal judge saying you can't ban early voting on college campuses? Are you registered to vote? You know, the deadline to register for the primary election is coming up July 30th, right around the corner. We want you to give us a call from anywhere in Florida as we kick off the hour with a look at access to the ballot with the League of Women Voters. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Patty Brigham, you're one of the groups that brought this lawsuit challenging the early voting ban on Florida campuses. What's your reaction to the judge's ruling here?
Well, we are thrilled by the ruling. This is a victory for our democracy, and it's terrific for the students who stood up and said, we should be able to vote early on our college and university campuses. It's a true victory for them, and they are to be applauded for their leadership.
Now, in the decision, the judge said that the state's policy had the effect of creating a second class of voters, in other words, college students, because you're supposed to have a polling place very close to where you work, study, or live. Is this going to prompt some counties to shuffle around their list of early voting sites? Will we see more early voting sites on college campuses in the wake of this, maybe?
We certainly hope so. We have some very large universities in our state, the University of Florida, where some of the students on this lawsuit reside. And, of course, University of Central Florida in Orlando, Florida State University in Tallahassee, and, of course, a number of state colleges. So we are tremendously hopeful that our supervisors of elections will, you know, take this very seriously, take a look at the colleges and universities in their counties, and the need for providing early voting precincts on those campuses. We want to make it easier for our students to vote, not harder.
It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup. And of course, that's your mission, increasing awareness of voting, increasing access to voting. What was your reaction to the state's logic around this? They said, no, you can't vote on campus because setting up an early voting site would be affiliated with a specific educational institution, I guess particularly the University of Florida. It's interesting to note that the judge that slapped down Governor Scott's administration on this, he's a UF grad. not that that necessarily matters, but the state didn't see eye to eye with groups like you on this. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that was outrageous. Not to allow early voting on college and university campuses is not what we should be doing in a true democracy. We have something called the 26th Amendment, where voters of a certain age should not be impeded in exercising their constitutional right. With the amount of students who are now getting involved in their civic duty, getting involved in registering to vote after the mass shooting in Parkland, we're seeing a very enthusiastic energy coming from young people who want to exercise their right to vote. So when they arrive on a college campus or a university campus and they find out, they would have found out before this great ruling, that they were not able to do early voting, that would have not set a great example. And many of these students, they are living on campus, they don't have a car, and they may not be near a early voting polling place. So once again, we applaud Judge Walker on this because these students will no longer be disenfranchised.
Now, as you pointed out, Patty, youth voter registration in Florida is up double digits in the wake of the mass shooting in Parkland at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Later in this hour, we're going to be talking to one of those Parkland students as he joins his fellow classmates going around the country trying to get young people registered to vote. Do you think that will actually translate, though, to turnout on Election Day? Young people don't always turn out in the same numbers, of course, as older voters. What are your thoughts about that?
We are certainly hopeful it will translate into more young people turning out to vote. We've seen an energy coming out of the students after what happened at Parkland like we've never seen before. I mean, they have a bus tour going around the country and registering people to vote. I think that we're about to see a real turning point in our young people getting involved in the civic process. Is extremely exciting.
And we're talking voting here on the Florida Roundup. Are you registered? The deadline's July 30th if you want to vote in the primary, which is in August. As a federal judge says, college campuses can be sites for early voting. What are your thoughts? It's 305-995-1800 to join the show. Let's go to Michelle in Davie. Hey, Michelle, you're on the air. How are you?
Hello, I'm great. Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm so thankful for the League of Women Voters. I'm so thankful for Judge Walker to, thwart these attempts to voter suppression. My daughter just turned 18 in June. We participated in the March for Our Lives rally. I worked with a lot of parents that were affected by the Parkland shooting, and I'm just excited. I am over the moon. I'm so happy that, you know, these kids are going to have a voice and not be discouraged. She's already encouraging all of her friends. They're already registered to vote. So these numbers are really exciting. I'm ecstatic.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for the call. Patty Brigham, League of Women Voters of Florida. That caller, Michelle, called the effort to prevent early voting on campuses voter suppression. Now, that was not the argument the state made. Where does your organization, the League, stand on that?
I'm afraid I didn't hear the first part of your question.
She saw the effort to ban, that caller saw the effort to ban early voting on college campuses as voter suppression. Is that an argument you made in your lawsuit?
Well, the arguments that were made in the lawsuit I will leave up to our attorneys to answer, but I will say that these students who wanted to vote early on their campuses were disenfranchised. They were not able to do that, and you could certainly call that a form of voter suppression. We should be doing everything we can to make it easier for our college and university students to vote. The judge took that seriously. He took it very seriously, and so these students will now have the opportunity. I mean, the fact of the matter is that in 2016, there were nearly 830 students enrolled in public state colleges and universities. And early voting that year accounted for approximately 40% of all votes cast in the 2016 election. So these numbers show just how important it is to make it possible, to make it easier for those students living on campus to be able to cast their vote early.
Let me ask you in a related matter having to do with access to voting in Florida. There's a three-judge panel right now of the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals weighing whether felon rights should be fully restored here in Florida. A group of plaintiffs who've been convicted of a felony have filed another lawsuit challenging the Florida Board of Executive Clemency. That's the name of the board that decides whether to restore a felon's voting rights or not if they've completed their sentence, paid restitution. That's been a controversial aspect of access to voting in Florida, too. And we're waiting to see how that legal process plays out. But what about that aspect of the whole battle over Florida ballots that we're seeing play out really intensely this summer as we make our way to the primary?
Well, I would say to all of the voters to read up on Amendment 4, which is the citizens' initiative that will require the state to allow those felons, those ex-felons who have paid their dues to society, to have their voting rights restored. That is extremely important. We're one of the only states, I think there are three states in the country where we don't have this restoration of voting rights for former felons.
That I think it's Iowa happen. And Kentucky are the only other states, right?
Okay,
Iowa and
yes.
Kentucky.
Yes, that's exactly right. So the opportunity in November is for the voters to decide this. We need a 60% vote for an amendment to pass in the state. The League did a lot of work on getting these petitions signed, and we are absolutely adamant that we must restore voting rights to those who have paid their dues to society.
And as we discuss that, you know, right now the state requires felons to wait 5 to 7 years to apply for their voting rights restoration, and then it can take years after that to complete the process. What are your thoughts about that? What are your thoughts about the judge's ruling allowing students to vote early on their college campuses? Youth voter registration is way up in Florida this summer. Let's go to Dan in Fort Lauderdale. He's on the line. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to thank you so much, League of Women Voters. You're so wonderful. Please keep doing the wonderful things you're doing. And thank you to all the young people who are registering. Please come and vote and change these lawmakers who tried to restrict your constitutional right to vote. My question is about turnout. What is the League of Women Voters doing, and how can more listeners help to get these kids and all other people to the polls? Thank you for taking my time.
Thanks for the call, Dan.
Well, thank you very much for that great feedback. That's very much appreciated. What we're doing in the League is we are fanning out across the state to register everywhere we can. Also, we've gone into high schools in a number of counties around Florida to pre-register young people who are 16 and 17 so they will be ready to vote when they turn 18. And we register pretty much everywhere we're invited. We set up voter registration tables on college campuses, at naturalization ceremonies, pretty much anywhere you might imagine, festivals. We take every opportunity we can to do that. Also, we have voter education on our website, BeReadyToVote.org. We have just launched Vote 411, which is essentially a voter guide online, so you can read all about the candidates, about the amendments on the ballot. There are 13 amendments on the Florida ballot this year. So we are also going to be fanning out around the state of Florida to educate the public on those amendments.
305-995 here on the Florida Roundup. Let's go to Med. He is on the line from Jacksonville. Hey, Med, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. We are just so happy, at least I'm just so happy, that the heroic Judge Walker and the League of Women Voters were able to intercede on the behalf of democracy. It's such a blatant seizure of power, or attempt to seize power and suppress votes by Rick Scott and his group. He stands revealed, I think, as a kind of politician we don't want in this country. But in any event, kudos to both, of course, the ACLU, but the League of Women Voters, who has always been at the forefront of voter freedom. And we just want to thank you all for keeping America a democracy.
All right. Thanks for that. Patty Brigham, you're with the League of Women Voters, and you're officially presented as a nonpartisan organization. Increasingly in recent years here in Florida, you have advocated on behalf of voting rights and voting access, often in opposition, I think we need to point out, to the Republican Party of Florida, which has been on the other side of a lot of these fights with you. What would you say to those who see the League as not a nonpartisan organization? Because you've really gone to battle on this issue of ballot access and voter rights. And you've been accused of partisanship by Republicans. On the other hand, callers like that one say that Republicans are trying to suppress Democratic-leaning constituencies, like young people, like perhaps convicted felons. I'm just curious to get your thoughts about the whole issue of partisanship around this. Your thoughts.
Well, we've certainly heard that criticism for years. I will say that it's not the policies that change, and the League takes a number of positions on policies. It's the parties. The parties are not stagnant. They're fluid, and so the parties are always changing. And we are nonpartisan. We do not take positions on political parties. We do not take positions on candidates. That allows us to reach across the aisle and work with elected officials on the issues that we believe in or don't believe in. And that we've been very successful at doing that. We do take very strong policy positions, and that we don't take that lightly. We do study. We reach consensus. We have a number of positions on everything from the environment to gun safety to education and health care. This has been a longstanding tradition in the League, and, you know, we're going to continue to hear that criticism, I'm sure, but we take our nonpartisanship very, very seriously. We have a C3 arm of our organization that is about education, and we educate the voters on all things voting, and we have a C4 where we do advocate, but when we do advocate, it is on policy, not candidates
on
for
policy
political party.
Not positions.
Yes. Yes.
And again, that deadline to register is coming up in just a few days, so register to vote, everybody. Patty Brigham, president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, thanks for being on the Florida Roundup. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I was delighted to be here.
A quick break, and in a moment, there's been another shooting death in Florida this week. Not uncommon, sadly, but this one is even more controversial because it involves the state's Stand Your Ground law. We're going to talk about that in just a few moments here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about gun rights in the state and take your calls. Get on the line now at 305-995-1800. It's the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is off today. Another shooting death in Florida this week. Sadly, that is not uncommon. But this case involves the state's controversial Stand Your Ground defense. A Florida civil rights attorney, best known for representing the family of Trayvon Martin, said this week that prosecutors should not apply Florida's Stand Your Ground law in a recent shooting death near Clearwater. Now, the case has brought Stand Your Ground back to the forefront once again, both here in the state and actually in headlines around the country. Attorney Ben Crump says State Attorney Bernie McCabe over near Clearwater should not allow a man named Michael Drejka to avoid murder charges after shooting and killing Marquise McLaughlin last week. This happened after a confrontation at a Clearwater convenience store.
This follows a long line of these alleged Stand Your Ground murderers where the individual is the initial aggressor and then kills the unarmed black person and claims it's self-defense.
Pinellas County Sheriff's Office investigators say the confrontation between the men met the criteria for a stand-your-ground defense, so they couldn't make an arrest, even though someone was shot and killed here after an argument in a parking lot. Now, Crump says prosecutors should not accept that determination, especially because the victim was black and the shooter was white. Crump is representing McLaughlin's family, and he compares his death to Trayvon Martin, an African-American teen who was killed by Neighborhood Watch Captain George Zimmerman in Volusia County, or Seminole County in 2012. Florida, of course, passed the nation's first Stand Your Ground law back in 2005, and it expanded on where and when a citizen can use deadly force. Put another way, if you say you had reasonable fear for your safety, you can, in some cases, legally fire your weapon on someone in a public space. Now, as this debate plays out over the latest controversial Stand Your Ground case, at the same time, students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School are barnstorming the state and the country, working to register young people to vote and get more involved in politics, and in particular, issues like gun reform. The survivors of the mass shooting in Parkland have become the face of the National March for Our Lives movement, calling for increased gun safety and gun restrictions. We're going to talk about this right now here on the Florida Roundup as we welcome Ryan Servitas. He's an incoming sophomore at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School and lost several friends in that mass shooting. Ryan, it's good to have you on the line with us. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And also with us, Dan Sweeney, a reporter for the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, who's been covering the Stand Your Ground case. Dan joins us via Skype. Dan, good to have you as well.
Great to be here.
And we want to talk about guns on the show right now and the youth vote and how those two issues are intersecting in Florida. Give us a call at 305-995-1800. Let us know your thoughts. In a moment, Dan, we'll talk about the specifics of the Stand Your Ground case over in Clearwater. But first, Ryan, you're an incoming sophomore at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. You lost friends in that tragedy in Parkland. And you're joining your cohort of students to go around Florida and get more young people registered to vote. This is called the Road to Change Tour. Can you bring us up to date on what you're involved in? It's my understanding you're in Jacksonville today. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing today?
So today we're in Jacksonville. Every place we like to go to, we usually like to have a registration drive or some sort of registration event where we can try to register as many people as possible. This doesn't just extend to young people. This extends to anyone who might have changed their address or wants to get more involved in their political system. Aside from that, we also have an event that's usually a town hall or panel of some sort where people can talk to students from our school and also local activists about how they can either get involved or just to hear their perspective on certain issues, ask them questions, and kind of understand where we come from more. So currently we have the registration party happening at our landing in Jacksonville, and then we also, tonight at UNF, have our town hall / panel where we're going to be there with some local kids talking about gun violence, how it's affected us, and how we plan on solving this issue.
And your efforts seem to be paying off here in Florida. Youth voter registration is up in double digits, I think by as much as 40%. What kind of feedback are you getting as you go around the state and talk about these issues from young people in particular, but also I'm assuming some of their parents are coming out to these events too?
Yeah, I mean, you know, gun violence affects so many different people. It can affect any community and anyone at anywhere, anytime. So what a lot of people do is they sympathize with us, they connect, and they kind of understand where we came from. And people simply just realize that the laws we currently have in place are not defending us from this ill that society has. You know, no one should ever have to go through a school shooting, and no one should ever have to lose a friend, a family member to gun violence. So I think a lot of people sympathize with us out of their safety, but also the safety of their loved ones, because they care about the well-being of their family members, of their friends, and just want a state where we have a sensible policy on gun violence and hopefully stop gun violence to the most that we can, to the highest degree.
Now, you lost several friends in the mass shooting at your school. Your movement Your movement is calling for reforms like universal comprehensive background checks, a searchable database for gun owners, banning high-capacity magazines, and semi-automatic assault rifles. That's really the March for Our Lives platform on this issue. What would you say to those listening who don't agree with your message? They don't think that the gun laws in the state need changing.
Honestly, you know, anyone who does disagree with us, we are fully willing to have a conversation, but we do recommend that you actually go to our website and do your own research, because a lot of people see us the way a lot of media has portrayed us, and we're trying to kind of take back our image and to handle that ourselves, because with any media, you're going to get an inherent bias. We're not anti-Second Amendment. We're not anti-gun. We're just pro-safety. So what we're trying to do is save as many lives as possible and put in place what we believe are common sense measures to do so. We've talked to many people who do disagree with us that, after explaining our policy, have completely switched and realized that we just want to put in these measures that don't impeach on your rights, that are common sense, to save the most lives.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Dan Sweeney, a reporter for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Just about a half an hour ago, we got an email from Senator Bill Nelson's office, Democrat senator from Florida. He's calling on the U.S. Department of Justice now to investigate the so-called Stand Your Ground shooting that we just described that happened in Clearwater last week. He's made the request in a letter he and some other lawmakers sent to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. So this case is heating up. You covered this case. What are your thoughts about the reaction from law enforcement that under the state statute, they couldn't necessarily make an arrest? What do we know about the case?
Well, you know, the basics of the case are that a woman, Brittany Jacobs, parked her car in a handicapped spot at a Circle A food store in Clearwater, and was approached by a man named Michael Drezka, who argued with her and told her she should, you know, get out of the spot because she didn't have a handicap permit. Her boyfriend, Marquise McLaughlin, came out of the store, saw the argument, and the rest is kind of captured on security footage from the store. You can see McLaughlin walk up to Mr. Drezka, shove him to the ground. Drezka produces a firearm. McLaughlin takes a couple of steps away and is then shot.
Right. So we have the video. We have Ben Crump, an attorney who's gotten involved in these flashpoint cases before. How do you react to Crump comparing this to the shooting of Trayvon Martin?
Well, I think it's a lot different. You know, there were no witnesses. There was no video. Nothing of the kind in the case of Trayvon Martin. Here, there's, you know, there's both of those things. And there's, you know, part of the Stand Your Ground law that wasn't really mentioned by the Pinellas County Sheriff. Yes, the Stand Your Ground law says you have no duty to retreat when engaging in self-defense in a public place. But there's another part of the law that says if you initially provoke the use of force or the threatened use of force, then you still do have a duty to retreat. So the question is whether Mr. Drezka, through, you know, his argument with McLaughlin's girlfriend, was provoking the use of force or the threatened use of force, in which case Stand Your Ground would not apply.
Right. And when it comes to this law, advocates say, you know, it protects people who are trying to defend themselves. Critics say it encourages vigilante justice. Ryan Servites, you are part of March for Our Lives. I don't believe your movement has a specific position on Florida Stand Your Ground law, does it?
Yeah, so as of now, we don't have a specific position on Florida Stand Your Ground laws, although we are pro any law that encourages safety. We do see some faults in Stand Your Ground that, as they said, kind of encourage, you know, deadly use of force and vigilante justice in ways that we don't think are necessarily best for the public, but as of yet, that's not an official stance. It's more of a personal stance. I can't speak for the movement on that. We 100% are going to start looking into Stand Your Ground laws more, especially because of this incident and multiple instances that incidents that have happened in our state that we feel merit that, you know, that duty of doing our research and looking into it and maybe coming up with a public position. But we'll definitely you know, address that. We do think it is a tragedy that anyone has to, you know, die at because of gun violence, and that's the bane of someone who, you know, is doing something out of malicious intent. But, you know, again, we're a pro-safety organization. Anything that is going to make our community safer, we are in favor of.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, lots of calls coming into the Florida Roundup. Where do you stand on the state's Stand Your Ground law? Can it be used as an appropriate defense after a man shoots another man outside Clearwater? The incident caught on video. And what are your thoughts about the students from Parkland barnstorming the state as part of their Road to Change tour, registering young people to vote in this fall's midterm elections? Let's go to your calls, 305-995-1800. Brian from Pompano has some ideas. Hi, Brian. You're on the radio. You're on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead.
Well, hello. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to really applaud Brian and the rest of this group. I marched with the MDS in Parkland and support them. Really passionate about it. I've been trying to reach somebody from that group for a long time, and I left my phone number with the gentleman who took this originally. I have an idea for them that I think could be really valuable in what they're doing. They're registering people to vote, but I think they would be really, really beneficial for them to set up a web page that could be monitored or whatever all over the country by different college campuses, where different colleges would go and interview their politicians and publish their reaction to gun laws. It would help people to know how to vote once they're registered.
Thanks for that. Ryan, your movement does have a website, doesn't it? Ryan?
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there is a website for your movement.
So we do have a website, one that doesn't specifically address his concern, but something that we do try to push is these youth organizations in college campuses that actually do have programs for things like this. Every area has different representatives, and we really do push representative accountability and students getting more involved with their political system. And many local organizations in these universities do talk to their politicians, do talk to their representatives. And whenever we go to an area with the university, we try to open up these youth organizations to, you know, open them up on a broader scale to talk to more of the community, to outreach to more young people, and to, as a whole, help to reinforce that aspect of representative accountability.
All right, and it's the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Mike is on the line from West Palm Beach. Hello, Mike. Go ahead.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. I would just say that their basis of looking at it with a guy in Clearwater is off. He violated the concealed weapons. The guy was backing away. If he had been, that could have been me on the ground. I might say something to somebody about parking in a handicapped spot. And if some guy bigger and stronger than me, younger than me, shoves me to the ground and hurts me, I might have my gun out. In fact, I would have my gun out. But he's backing up. You cannot shoot that guy. He's backing away from you.
Thanks, Mike. Now, the video, Dan Sweeney, you said the video does appear to show that. The
yes.
State attorney hasn't said yet, though, whether they will make a decision anytime soon about whether to prosecute Mr. McLaughlin in this case. But the video does appear to show that, the first viewing of it. Can an attorney for Mr. Drejka prove that he was in fear for his life based on what we see on the video?
Well, I mean, looking at it from his perspective, you know, the sheriff of Pinellas County, Bob Galtieri, said that there is about four seconds between when the gun was produced and when it was fired. You know, it seems like a forever amount of time looking at it now, but in the moment, I'm sure that went by in a heartbeat. And mm-hmm. It comes down to really, you know, what exactly is going through Mr. Drejka's mind at the time. Did, you know, was he in fear of his life? And that's a difficult thing to prove one way or the other in court.
And did the Pinellas County Sheriff appear to make the correct call by statute in citing this law?
The statute itself, 776.12 and 13, says that you have no duty to retreat if you're in fear of your life. But like I said, there's another statute that says if you're the initial aggressor, then you do have a duty to retreat. You do have a duty to get away from danger when someone uses force in response to your provocation. So it's, you know, that I think is a legal question that's bound to come up here.
Daniel is on the line from Jupiter right now. Hey, Daniel, thanks for holding. Go ahead quickly. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, so I just had a couple of points to make. First, I just want to commend the gentleman from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School and what they're doing is really incredible. But I just want to make 2 points. First of all, like, I wonder if there's concerns about how effective a restriction on assault weapons would be without actually doing what they did in Australia, which is doing an actual gun buyback. I'm just curious to know how effective that actual change. And secondly, I wanted to know what his opinion was on the public safety bill that was passed in response to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas recently. I just want to know what his thoughts were. They passed a lot.
Yeah, Ryan Servetus,
Florida.
The legislature did pass a measure, and it was named after your high school. What did you think of it? 1 minute to the break.
So, just to kind of, just go on to the break. Essentially, our opinion on that is that it was kind of an example of politicians putting in legislation that was not at all what their constituents asked for in whole, just to stay in office. It was really pandering in a way that wasn't legitimate representation. It was just kind of doing it so they can say they did something about the issue. We really felt it did not cover all facets of, you know, gun violence and how what we wanted to get done, and that as a whole we were really let down. And that was actually a big push for us, because we realized that if they weren't going to put in legislation that we believe needed to be enacted, then we were going to vote them out.
We are going to continue talking guns and voting here on the Florida Roundup with Ryan Servetus, a survivor of the Parkland school shooting and a sophomore at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Dan Sweeney also with us from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And your calls after the break. Get on the line now, 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup, statewide from Florida Public Radio. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is off today. We are continuing to take your calls here on the show this afternoon as we speak with Ryan Servetus, a survivor of the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and Dan Sweeney of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Brett in Jacksonville, he's been holding, talking about that Stand Your Ground case. Hi, Brett. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'd like to say that this is not a Stand Your Ground case. Even if we were in a duty to retreat state, in order to retreat, you have to be able to retreat safely. He's on the ground. There's no way to retreat safely. I believe, and so do many others, that the sheriff brought this up because he's not a big fan of Stand Your Ground and wanted to bring it into the press and make it an issue. This is not an issue in this case. What's at issue is what the gentleman said before, which is 776.04.1.2, is whether or not he provoked the fight, and at issue whether or not he had a reasonable belief that he was in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm. I don't know if he was injured in the fall. He was certainly about half the size of the man who pushed him, certainly much younger, and may have reasonably believed he was in danger of his life. That'll be for a jury and or the state's attorney to determine. It is not, however, a Stand Your Ground case.
All right, Brett, thanks for that. Dan Sweeney, what about Brett's comments? And could the sheriff have been employing some sort of strategy in saying, oh, I just can't prosecute this, as he seems to think?
Well, you know, he cited a recent change to the Stand Your Ground law that made just in the last legislative session. I was up there in Tallahassee during the last legislative session when they passed this change, and also when they passed the School Safety Act that you referenced to the previous caller. Now, instead of people trying to claim Stand Your Ground, saying that, you know, here's the evidence that I have a Stand Your Ground case, instead it's prosecutors who have to explain that they do not have a case. So that change was made in the last legislative session, and the sheriff cited that change, which doesn't seem to have a great deal of, you know, to do with this particular case of whether to arrest someone or not, and it was certainly a change that was strongly pushed back against by prosecutors. So, you know, I'm not particularly conspiracy minded, but certainly that change that he cited was not something that prosecutors wanted to see.
Lots of calls on this. Let's go to Don in Hollywood, Florida. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
So the gentleman that's in that represents the high school, are you looking to outlaw weapons? Are you looking to what? Make them all evaporate?
Okay, Ryan Servatus with March for Our Lives. Explain to Don, if you could, where you stand on gun restrictions in Florida, what your movement's trying to accomplish.
A huge, misunderstanding and misconception about our movement is that we are trying to ban weapons, like all weapons. That's not at all what we're doing. Obviously, we do have a, point in our policy that is things that includes things like permits to purchase, special permitting for certain weapons, and then if not, you can't get that weapon. But we are in no way looking to ban any weapon. We are pro-responsible gun owner, 100%. If you have a weapon, we're not going to try to take that away from you, or if you are responsible, you keep it in a safe place, then we think that you should be able to have that weapon. But for people that should not have that weapon, should they be mentally not able to have that weapon, or should they just be morally and or, at risk to themselves or others, then they simply should not be able to obtain that weapon. And that's our platform.
Frank in Miami. Go ahead, Frank. Thanks for your call this afternoon. Your thoughts?
Good afternoon. First of all, I congratulate individuals at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I am very proud of that generation. I just hope my generation had done the same thing, and maybe we could have saved a lot more lives. And with that, I'll say thank you. Have a good evening.
Thanks for that. Ryan, you've got a lot of fans out there among older activists who like the enthusiasm of your generation and the energy that you're spreading around the country around this issue. Of course, you're associated with the issue of gun violence. But I want to ask you quickly, that's not the only issue that's going to bring people out to the polls this August and this fall. Do you see your activism as extending beyond the issue of gun reform?
As of now, we really just want to focus on this one issue because we feel like it is so immediate. It affected us and continues to affect thousands of others every day. And so what we really want people to focus on this upcoming election is this issue. At the same time, we do realize that, this isn't the only issue people are going to be voting on. This isn't the only issue, that is kind of hot button this election cycle. And in order to kind of address that, we're trying to promote youth engagement in their democracy. We want to teach every child who's turning 18, every young adult, every college student, how to vote, how to educate themselves on who to vote for. We're trying to show them how to get more involved in their democracy, how to participate in activism, how to be active, how to be out there. And that's essentially what our whole goal is. We do understand, not everyone may agree on other issues as well, which is why we don't want to, bring up other issues and then alienate people who agree with us on our gun reform stances, but then may not agree with us in other stances, as we also do have a huge array of opinions in our own group on different issues. But this is the one thing we agree on that we feel is so immediate and that we feel like the youth need to get involved in.
Okay, your immediate issue. Dan Sweeney with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. This issue is certainly a wedge issue like other really divisive ones that could play a role in our elections in Florida. The abortion issue comes to mind, too. In light of the student activism that we're seeing here in Florida and youth voter registration really spiking, this could cut a number of ways at the polls. Stand Your Ground, polling on that has never been, I don't believe, actually, no, let me correct myself. I think it has enjoyed majority support in Florida, but I don't know when the last poll on that was taken. What do you know about that?
I haven't seen a recent one, but I do know that a lot of previous polls on it really strongly depends on how you ask the question. If you're going to ask, should people have the right to defend themselves against aggression? Well, a lot of people are going to say yes. If it's, really, you have to look at in the polling at how exactly the poll is phrased, the poll question is phrased, because that really kind of strongly affects the answer, particularly in this instance.
Let's take another call on this. It's Tatiana from Coral Springs. Tatiana, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for listening to me. I just want to say I'm a fellow Eagle, and I just want to say to Ryan, thank you so much to you and the rest of the you know, March for Our Lives movement, because you guys have definitely inspired our community in something that we have been neglecting for a long time. And I'm very proud of you guys. In regards to the gentleman in Claremont who was shot, I just feel appalled. Appalled that this has not already, there should have been an arrest to begin with. I'm appalled that there's a reason not to hold him accountable for someone's death. And I'm appalled that I understand the gentleman brought a gun to a knife fight and that he was afraid that he might get hurt because this gentleman was much bigger than him and clearly much younger. But, you know, he initiated this argument with this young woman. And I feel that the state attorney not taking the initiative to go ahead and file charges against him or the sheriff's office who didn't file charges to begin with is just a reason more why we can see the oppressive systemic injustices against our black and brown communities throughout Florida. You know, this is not just something that happens in Pinellas County. This is a lot of things that happen throughout Florida, and I just feel disgusted, honestly, that this is still happening.
All right. Thanks for that.
Today.
Thanks for that call, Tatiana. Real quickly, Dan Sweeney, pressure ramping up on this, will that force the state attorney to act, do you think, as this gets hotter?
I mean, it's entirely possible. I do want to make one quick point. You know, this is the second caller we've had about this, that somebody has referred to Michael Drezka as an older man, an elderly man. And I've had a lot of emails from readers and all that have said the same thing. Michael Drezka is 48 years old. So, you know, it sort of paints the wrong picture to say that this is a man in his decrepitude who is you know, in fear of his life here. He was a lot smaller, you know, certainly than Mr. McLaughlin, but to treat him as though he's a decrepit old man is sort of, you know, it's
okay,
not really
sure.
Necessarily the case.
And then finally, Ryan Servatus with March for Our Lives. Quickly, you're going to be at a town hall tonight on the University of North Florida campus. Can you share details with our listeners?
Yeah, so tonight we have our town hall at the UNF campus. There should be signs posting for where to go. I believe we have a lecture hall for that. It's going to be a great event. We're going to have some local students who have been immediately affected by gun violence, and also some of us, just to kind of talk about, you know, our beliefs, what we stand for, and essentially how we as the youth can get involved to actually change our union and to make changes that better represent us. A huge part of our platform will be, you know, voter involvement and youth registration, youth involvement in our democracy, as well as our, you know, points on gun reform. If you have any questions, it's a great place to ask them. We have plenty of great representatives there who are willing to answer any questions about our movement. But, see you all out there, and thank you so much for giving me this opportunity, and you guys have a good one.
Thank you, and I think you're going beyond points beyond Florida after tonight, too. Isn't that right, real quick?
After tonight, we are going to Tallahassee. We have a rally. We're going to Panama City. Then we are going to Tallahassee, and then after that, we're going to Pensacola. We're just kind of tour around North Florida. The way our tour has been working up until now has been we separated Florida into three main areas, south, central, and north. So this is our north.
Well, thanks for
the tour.
Taking a time out from the tour to talk to us. Ryan Servatus with March for Our Lives, graduate of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. And Mr. Sweeney, thank you for being with us. Dan Sweeney from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Thanks, guys.
Sure thing.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Jason Zabka is our technical director. WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. Theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.